wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ihr hört Insert Moin, ich bin der Micha und heute Morgen habe ich ein Interview für euch. Juhu! Endlich mal wieder ein Interview und zwar mit dem Kenny Young. Das ist ein Komponist, den ihr wahrscheinlich alle schon mal gehört habt. Und zwar hat er die Musik zu Little Big Planet gemacht unter anderem oder Tethered, dem VR-Spiel oder letztens auch Astro's Playroom. Und genau dieser Soundtrack zu Astro's Playroom, der ja vor allen Dingen durch den CPU-Song berühmt geworden ist, den gibt es jetzt digital zum Streamen, den kann man sich zum Beispiel auf Spotify anhören. Und zur Feier dieser Veröffentlichung anlässlich dessen hat Kenny ein paar Interviews gegeben und ich hatte die Chance, in diesem Rahmen mit ihm zu sprechen. Es werden einige von euch sagen, hör, Moment, Astro's Playroom, PS5, das habe ich noch gar nicht gespielt. PlayStation 5 sind ja gerade leider schwer verfügbar. Und Astro's Playroom ist ein kostenloses Spiel, das dabei liegt, was aber wirklich richtig gut ist. Also man sollte sich davon nicht täuschen lassen, auch wenn es eine kostenlose Dreingabe ist. Es ist eines der besten Spiele, die letztes Jahr technisch gesehen rausgekommen sind. Wenn ihr also eine PS5 erhört, probiert es unbedingt aus. Und das hat wirklich extrem süße Musik. Und CPU-Song, damit ihr wisst, worum es geht, hier mal ganz kurz eingespielt. Das ist geil, oder? Ihr müsst euch vorstellen, ihr läuft da mit Astro durch eine Welt, durch Level, die alle irgendwie als Thematik die Innereien von dem Konsolenleben haben. Das heißt, das hier ist die GPU, die Grafikeinheit, die dort singt. Und sie singt von ihren Träumen, sie singt darüber, was sie so jeden Tag macht. Und die ganze Welt, die ihr da seht, die hat irgendwie mit Schaltkreisen zu tun und mit natürlich mit Grafik und all solchen Sachen. Astro's Playroom soll die PlayStation 5 hervorheben, was die Features betrifft. Deswegen sind da gerade beim Controller mit dem DualSense-Zeug auch sehr viele Funktionen im Spiel integriert. Also die ganze Vibration ist ziemlich gut integriert. Aber auch es geht auch darum, die PlayStation-Historie zu feiern. Deswegen sieht man in verschiedenen Leveln auch viel, viel Zeug aus der ganzen Geschichte ab der PlayStation 1, also wirklich ab der Urkonsole, bis hin zu verrückten Peripherien und so weiter. Also das Ganze ist thematisch dann entsprechend eingebaut in die Level. Und das ja ist für Kenny, glaube ich, ein ganz gutes Sprungbrett gewesen für seine Kreativität, denn er hat da wirklich ein paar ganz pfiffige Ideen untergebracht, wie unter anderem diesen CPU-Song. Die CPU ist übrigens ein Chip, der auf so einer schwebenden Insel irgendwo im Himmel schwebt und auf euch herab guckt wie die Sonne und von dort oben singt. Also die schwebt die ganze Zeit über den Level und singt diesen Song. Und das ist total geil. Wenn man das sieht, man kann nicht anders als grinsen. Sehr, sehr schön. Naja, gut. Kenny, dem will ich jetzt vorkommen lassen. Das Interview ist auf Englisch. Und ich wünsche euch dabei viel Spaß. Und ich verlinke euch natürlich dann den Soundtrack auf den entsprechenden Kanälen auf Spotify und so weiter, falls ihr dann selber mal reinhören wollt. Viel Spaß! So, Kenny, thank you very much for your time for this interview. And at first, I think most of our audience already has listened to your work, but they don't know you as in person. Can you please introduce yourself briefly?
Sure. My name's Kenny Young. I'm a Scottish composer, sound designer working in games. I started out my career as a sound designer working at Sony's London studio back in 2004 during the sort of the peak of the PlayStation 2 era. And then I was there for 3 or 4 years, went to join a company called Media Molecule when they were a plucky young startup. And I started their audio department And worked there for 8 years, helped to create Little Big Planet 1 and 2, Terry Games, and also worked on Dreams for a few years in its early sort of pre-production period. But I went freelance in 2015, so six years ago now, which is just feels like yesterday. But since then, I've been continuing to work with Sony. I shipped Terry Unfolded with Media Molecule, and then I began working with the Sobi team on the Astrobot Rescue Mission game for PlayStation VR.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, of course, Astro's Playroom for PlayStation 5.
Really nice. This would be my first question, because I played Playroom and I was blown away by the sound design and the music. Because it was so funny to see the singers in the sky singing all over the level. So who came up with that idea?
That'll be me. the GPU jungle area and the music for that is one of the bits of music that people seem to have responded to the most warmly. And strangely enough, it was actually the first area in the game that I tackled. But it got off to a little bit of a ropey start, because I tried a couple of different things that didn't work out. The first of which was quite a traditional VGM approach to scoring a jungle area with pan pipes. So it was the feedback for that one was that it was maybe a little bit too childlike and a bit kiddie. So then I sort of, they asked me to try like kind of the opposite thing, something that was a little bit more kind of like mainstream. So that's when I first started playing around with the idea of doing a song, but that didn't quite work out. And so I did something that was maybe a bit more like kind of a bit more clubby.
Mm-hmm.
But that also didn't quite fit the level. But that track found a home as the music you hear in the CPU Plaza area, which does have more of a kind of a club vibe. The idea is that the little robots are sort of having a party in there inside the PlayStation 5. So that was great. That track wasn't completely wasted. We managed to reuse that. But then it was kind of back to the drawing board. And before I'd even started working on the project, I'd been chatting with Nicolas Doucet, who's the creative director on the Astrobot games, about how on Astrobot Rescue Mission, I'd used a lot of little voice samples and robotic vocalizations.
Yeah.
And he felt that added quite a human touch to the experience that otherwise wasn't really there in any other way, and that people had responded quite warmly to that. So I was thinking about ways of trying to get some of that juice and put it into Astro's Playroom.
Yeah.
And he'd also, before I'd started working on the project, he told me a little bit about Astro's Playroom. It's going to be pre-installed in PlayStation 5. No pressure with that huge audience. And I'd been thinking about ways to use voice. And I had this crazy idea to kind of personify the PlayStation 5 by having it sort of sing to the player. And that, although that sounds like a little bit out there, that was kind of directly inspired by a lot of the dreamlike imagery that you find in a lot of the classic original PlayStation 1 and 2 adverts. If you think about, like David Lynch's the Third Space advert, which is completely bonkers. But, I think the Sony brand does have this sort of dreamlike thing going on. And so I was drawing on that. And I came up with this lyric. I can't remember exactly, but it's like, yeah, you remember me, I've been in your dreams. So that was this idea that maybe you've always known the PlayStation 5 that you're like star-crossed lovers or something. Anyway, I didn't manage to get that idea into the game because it's maybe a little bit too out there. But when I was going back to the drawing board on the GPU level, I was just couldn't quite get past this idea of coming up with a song, and just managed to find a way of writing a love song from the GPU to the player. And when I originally sent over a demo that didn't have the vocoder kind of robotic sound on it, it was just me singing it. But even though it was like super rough and ready, Nicolas was like, oh, this could be cool. So it had promise. And then from that point on, it was just a way of trying to get it to the tone of it and the production to sort of fit the GPU jungle area. We also spoke about how in this project, because it was, pre-installed on PlayStation 5, and a lot of people would just be expecting this to be a tech demo and didn't necessarily have very high expectations for it. So we felt like we could take some creative risks.
Cool.
And that was again, I don't know if I would have had the courage to sort of suggest this idea unless he'd also said that up front, which was, you know, he didn't necessarily have to agree to it, but, yeah. You know, I felt like I was able to float the idea. And yeah, fortunately, he was into it and the team really ran with it. And I think they already planned to put the little GPU character in the level. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was too much of a stretch to sell them on the idea of making it sing. I did all the heavy lifting in putting like hundreds of markers into the audio file to make the lips, the phonemes all match up with the song.
Cool.
And I don't know whose idea it was to put the Easter egg into the level of the hidden lyrics. Can't take credit for that, but I think it's a really nice example of, you know, the sort of collaborative spirit that I work with the team, and they come up with that really nice idea. Cool.
Really, really, really nice. So about the lyrics and the overall sound design and the ideas. So you basically had the chance to incorporate the whole PlayStation history into your sound, into your song. So was this an easy task, or is it, came the inspiration instantly?
Yeah, it was a tricky one insofar as the way it actually unfolded was the focus earlier in development was just on obviously the DualSense controller, which is the star of the show, and that's the point of the project in many respects, is to introduce players to the DualSense. Mm-hmm. So and the Sobi team's process is to prototype stuff and then see what works and build from there. So the levels were all very DualSense centric, and for me the focus was very much on the sense of place. Mm-hmm. So obviously GPU jungle, hence the song about the GPU, and all the different areas have these different hardware focuses, the SSD, CPU plaza, etc. So for me, it was about sense of place. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't too worried about trying to back up the PlayStation side of things at that point, which I think is fine, because if you try and get music to do too much, it ends up just being a little bit of a bit of a mess. There's a lot going on in the project. It can't kind of support everything all at once. But some of the places that we really backed up that PlayStation sound was, of course, at the end of the levels, you have the player unlocks these artifacts, ancient artifacts buried in the ground, which are the PlayStation consoles of the past.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun and was honored to be trusted with taking those iconic PlayStation boot sounds and sort of making sure that they fitted the context in a more modern presentation. So, for example, PlayStation 1 and 2 are in stereo, and I upmixed them into surround sound.
Yeah.
And I was very respectfully added some new elements just to sort of update them a little bit. So my go-to example is that on the PlayStation 2 boot sound, I've added like a little bass drop, a cheeky little bass drop, just to give it a little bit more energy and oomph. And Nicholas's direction for that was great, because he was saying, you know, they should be how we remember them, not how they actually are.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, you know, they're iconic, so you can't mess with them too much. But I was just able to just sort of update them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the other fun thing was to, of course, the PlayStation 1 and 2 in particular didn't have menu ambiences, because there's, you know, certainly, I can't remember PlayStation 2, but certainly PlayStation 1, there is no menu other than the CD player. It's like you just put the disc in and it loads up. So I had fun taking those boot sounds and using their kind of component parts and doing some creative sound design techniques to sort of basically create those background ambiences from scratch. Also going back to some vintage synthesizers from that time to just maybe get some new material that felt sympathetic and that would work. And I'm sort of encouraged by the fact that I've not seen anyone complaining about the fact that I've sort of created these background ambiences. I think people have just sort of accepted them as is, because hopefully I did a respectful, tasteful job. And then the other thing is, not to give away any spoilers for people that haven't played the game, but the final boss level at the end is very PlayStation 1 centric, a lot of fun trying to recreate the sound of classic PlayStation 1 games in a couple of different ways. PlayStation 1 music was done in a couple of ways. One of was, and the one that people seem to remember the most, I think, is that it used sort of Redbook CD audio, the technical name for it, which is just basically like a CD album.
Yeah.
So some people remember taking a game like Wipeout and you could put the disc into your CD player, skip track one, so you don't blow up your speakers because it was all the data from the game. And then you could actually listen just to the CD music that was on there. The other way it was done was with memory resident samples. So a game like Final Fantasy VII is like a classic example of a game that used that approach. And so I kind of tried both things for that final boss. The intro track to that's done by me sampling vintage synths, converting it into Sony's the PlayStation 1 audio file format and back again just to try and get some of that vintage ADPCM grit. And I also created an impulse response of the PS1's reverb to try and, again, a little bit of that sound. So it's all quite nerdy, hardcore stuff. But, you know, that was as much just because I was interested in that. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I got into the industry in the PlayStation 2 era, so which was not that radically different from the PlayStation 1's audio system. So I kind of was familiar with a lot of that and just was just enjoying that process and revisiting my past as well. And, yeah, I don't know how much of that is appreciated by people playing the game. But it is, yeah, it's just, I think, an example of the kind of care and attention to detail that's gone into the project.
Yeah.
Not just me, but from everyone in the Sobi team.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who are familiar with sound will recognize the work you've done. It's really cool. It's really cool.
It's very kind of you, thanks.
Yeah, it's really cool hearing your approach to this with all the, also with the old school synthesizer sounds and so. It's really, really cool. So my next question would be, as you worked with Team Molecule and other projects like this, this kind of makes you like an expert of cute, whimsical sounds.
Yeah, it's true, actually, because I have this conversation with other composer friends in the industry, is that it's a bit of a double-sided coin.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it's really good to have a reputation like that, because then all of a sudden you become the go-to person for that kind of approach. So, you know, that's what gets me work, basically. So I'm incredibly grateful to have that reputation. And anyway, it's a positive reputation. It's not like I do that and people are like, you're rubbish at it. It's like I do it and people seem to respond warmly to it. So so it's good. But the flip side is that, that's another way of saying it, is that you're just like horribly typecast. And so like there's no escape from that, basically. But fortunately, I really love what I do, and I really love working on, you know, family friendly experiences like Little Big Planet or Tearaway or Astro's Playroom, or some of the indie stuff I've done, like Knights and Bikes with Foam Sword Games. These are all very different experiences, but you're right, there is this kind of whimsy to it. And what I've also discovered just from working with other people and hiring people and stuff when I was an audio director working in house, is that it's, although I have an affinity with that aesthetic, it's actually quite hard for a lot of people to do. And I'm not sure why, because I find it kind of easy, but I think it's something to do with the fact that because it's quite naive in many respects, it's really easy to go past that and fall into being maybe a little bit saccharine and a little bit sort of sickly cute and sweet. And that's, it's very easy to go too far down that road. And so it's nice to be good at something and for it to be hard to do.
Is it, maybe it's easy for you because it's also part of your personality? So
That's something that Nicholas has said as well. It's like, it's just because I'm quite a playful person. It's like my music is very playful. And I think a lot of my music playfulness comes from the fact that I started in the industry as a sound designer. So I enjoy playing with sound and taking ideas and just having fun with them. And so it's a good fit for these kinds of, you know, fun platforming experiences. So I think you might be right about that.
but is it sometimes difficult to get the right? So there's whimsical, there's cute, but there's also childish, like you said before. Is it? It's sometimes a very thin line to walk between these two.
Yeah, definitely. And in a way, I think I'm quite attracted to, like, with the GPU song. It's like on paper, it's a terrible idea. Because it so easily could have been just like a shopping list of graphics coding terminology. And at points in the songwriting process, it kind of was. And I was just like, this is awful. But taking an idea that is difficult to make work and finding a way to make it work is often a good recipe or approach for creating a unique experience. Because if it's an idea that most people would just like, as soon as it entered their head, they'd be like, nope.
Yeah.
If you're going to find a way to make that work, then you're going to create an experience that no one else would even attempt to do. Mm. And that's going to create a unique, that's going to be a fun experience to, you know, try and make that work. It's a challenge, if you like, creative challenge, but it's also a unique experience for players to have. And I think if you can pull it off, it could be rewarding for the creatives and for the players.
So I talked to several composers in the past and to several sound designers in the past, and also composing music myself. And there's a question that is really close to my heart. So music is super important for games, obviously, and for all kinds of media. But do you feel like that a lot of players recognize this, that they experience the music in a way where they recognize, okay, wow, this was a lot of hard work? Or is this something players still need to learn somehow?
Well, there's two sides to it. One, I don't think it's bad if people don't notice it, because in many ways the power that sound and music has comes from the fact that they are operating on, it's not a good turn of phrase, but they're an emotional signifier, and they are able to assist the experience and to help players feel things. And part of the reason they're so powerful is that people aren't necessarily aware of that happening. And I think in many ways what makes an experience sometimes not work is if you are aware of the music manipulating you. Like, I think a lot of people have had that experience of watching a film and you're just holding it together because it's like a emotional moment, but then the music kicks in, you're just like sobbing in tears and you're like, damn it, Hans Zimmer or whoever is responsible for, you know, subjecting you to that. But, you know, it speaks to the power of music, and it is powerful stuff, so I think you do have a responsibility to sort of use it wisely if you can. And even in an experience like Astro's Playroom, which at its heart is an old school platforming game, so the music's intentionally quite naive as to my forties as a composer, but even within that there's opportunities to, you know, heighten the experience. Platforming, a lot of it's about, you know, intensity and energy. That's often the start of my composition process, but also, you know, something like the GPU track, again, I hate to keep going back to it, but it's something that, you know, a lot of players have really connected with because of its emotional resonances about that relationship between the hardware and players. It's powerful stuff. So I don't have a problem with people not noticing it. And then briefly, the whole thing about, do people respect it? Yeah, there's definitely a scene of people who really love video game music, and they love it for what it is. You know, they're gamers, and the reason I think it's often a tangential relationship. The reason they love the game music is because first and foremost they love games, and they've had these amazing experiences, and it's really wonderful for someone like me to create music which has a life outside of games. And so, yeah, to bring it back to the soundtrack that's out on the 12th, it's just this really cool relationship that I get to have with players that extends beyond the games. And again, the only reason that happens is because music has this wonderful ability to conjure up your memories. And so it's nice for people to listen to the music from a game and just all those memories of the game that they enjoy playing sort of come back to them like a warm blanket. It's nice to be part of that.
So music is also kind of a storytelling device, isn't it? Right. So you can tell stories, transport emotions, and maybe talk to the audience in a more subconscious way. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's something to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, we talk. Certainly in sound design terms, we talk about sound. The ears being like the back door to the mind. And that's a nice way of thinking about it, I think. Yeah,
that's beautiful. Like I said, you're more famous for this cute, whimsical sound. But is there something you really want to try, like in the future? Maybe there's something, a different kind of sound we're looking at. Yeah, I would like to check that out.
You know, it's funny. I mean, the short answer is not really. And it's not like I've thought about it, but the way I always approach projects is that, you know, it's about the player experience first and foremost. So it's unlikely that I'm going to get asked to work on something that's radically outside of my comfort zone, just because generally people are looking for someone who's got a proven ability to create a certain kind of music. So If I wanted to step outside of that whimsical wheelhouse that I find myself in,
yeah.
it would be on me to like show people that I can do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I would do that, I suppose, if I wasn't happy with the work I was doing and felt like I was trapped and needed to do something else.
Yeah.
So as long as I am happy doing the kind of work I'm doing, I don't see me really exploring that. But the biggest breadth I've had so far in my career would be the fact that my background as a musician is as a violinist and a fiddler. So I kind of know about the world of traditional folk music, Scottish music, also American Appalachian music, some stuff that I've studied.
Nice.
And I got to, you know, explore a bit of that on the Tearaway Games, because they were obviously quite, you know, folk-infused experiences and soundtrack. But I haven't really, you know, gone down the whole orchestral or classical route. And, you know, that's just because the games I've worked on haven't really required that. Excuse me.
Yeah, no problem.
So, yeah, like, it would be fun to explore a bit more of that. But, yeah, like I say, as long as I'm working on stuff that I'm enjoying, I'm not too worried about needing to scratch any other itches right at the moment. I also benefit from the fact that I am a sound designer as well. So, just to be clear, you know, I'm not responsible for any of the sound content on the Astrobot games. I was just the composer on those. Though I did help them a little bit with some of the mix stuff on Playroom, just because I have a surround setup, and getting all that stuff to work during the pandemic was challenging for the audio team. So, as a sound designer and composer, I get to take a break from writing music on some projects and go do sound design on another project. And that also keeps things fresh for me. It means when I come back to doing music, I'm kind of raring to go, because I've maybe not done it for a few months. That kind of relationship between ping-ponging between doing sound and doing music works for me.
Yeah, this is really cool. So the last question would be about the upcoming release of your soundtrack. I think it's the 10th of March.
I think it comes out on the 12th.
But
your embargo is on the 10th.
All right. Okay. Sorry, my mistake. But is there something you would like to add to the release of the soundtrack? Is there due to something special for it, or is it?
Oh, well, that would be telling, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I can say that I did put some like little Easter eggs in there,
nice.
Which nobody outside of me knows about at this point. Nothing that will get me sued. It's fine. One of the challenges, of course, is taking an in-game presentation of music and making it work in the soundtrack, because they're two different mediums, and you can't keep everyone happy. I can say that I think every bit of music in the game is on the soundtrack. I think that's right. And that includes things like the menu music that you hear when you hover over the Astro's Playroom icon on the PlayStation 5 menu, some people seem to really love listening to because it's so chilled out.
Yeah.
So I've tried to get it all in there, and I've done my best to make the arrangements of some of the tracks, particularly ones that are kind of more interactive in the game, try and get that kind of to flow smoothly. Yeah. I hope people enjoy it.
Kenny, thank you very, very much for your interview, and thank you very much for your time.
And no, thank you very much, Michael. It was really nice speaking to you.
Thank you very much for your time, and it was super cool, this interview. Thank you.
Cool. Cheers, Michael.